when you get married and you pick your venue and you pick your flowers and you pick your dress and you go cake tasting, you have to sign contracts for all of those vendors. But the most important contract that you're going to enter into is when you walk down the aisle with that person, and often people don't even know the terms.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
I'm Tina Brown, and you're listening to TBD. What do you say when Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, with a fortune of $137 billion, announces on social media that he's getting a divorce? Well, in this case, I guess it's, Alexa, what's a prenup? Because in this case, there was none. And he and Mackenzie, his wife of 25 years, live in Washington State that requires a 50-50 split of marital assets. If indeed Mrs. Bezos gets half, it wouldn't only dethrone her husband as the world's richest man, it would elevate her to be the world's richest woman. Of course, how it all plays out rests largely in the hands of the couple's divorce lawyers. And whenever a marriage between celebrities, athletes, or multimillionaires starts to go south, there's usually one person on their speed dial, Los Angeles attorney Laura Wasser. Known as the Disso Queen, as in the dissolution of marriage, Wasser has represented countless A-list stars and high net worth couples, including Angelina Jolie, Johnny Depp, Ryan Reynolds, and Heidi Klum, to name drop a few. Wasser is also playing a role in the Bezos saga. She's mediating the divorce of Jeff's new girlfriend, Lauren Sanchez, and her husband, Hollywood mega-agent Patrick Weitzel. Wasser, of course, understands the high emotional price couples pay for the end of a marriage. That's why she recently launched a do-it-yourself divorce site called It's Over Easy, so couples who can't afford her can learn to navigate settlements themselves and, with any luck, spare each other and their kids more heartache. She has all the answers for couples saying, I don't, and we're going to talk to her now. So, hi, Laura. Welcome to TBD.
Thank you for having me, Tina.
So, is there some coincidence about the fact that so many divorces seem to happen in January?
I don't think it's a coincidence. I think many, many people just think if they can make it through the holidays with their families, their in-laws, that at the beginning of the year, they will effectuate their New Year's resolutions and begin the process.
So you get a load of phone calls on January the 5th, right?
I certainly do.
That's very amusing. Well, when a spouse walks into your office for the first time to consult about a divorce, what are the first questions that you ask them?
I often will say to them, what happened? And more than anything, that has to do with just my morbid curiosity. I'm interested in the human nature of relationships. By the time they've gotten to my office, there has usually been an intake interview with my assistant, which will determine whether there's a conflict with their spouse or any other law firms, you know, how much their estate is, how long they've been married, whether they have children, so that we can kind of evaluate what kind of a case it's going to be, if we're the first attorneys in or if there's been somebody else that we're taking over for. And then when they get here, like I said, because I've been doing this for a while now, I'm always interested to hear where the breakdown occurred.
Is the client often in a highly emotional state when they come in? And how do you navigate the sensitivities of that?
It depends. I mean, it really depends when in the process they're coming in, how much counseling, therapy, whether they're the person who's kind of driving it or whether they're the person who's on the receiving end. I definitely have a box of tissues on my desk, that's for sure.
So do you ever think, you know, when a client comes to you, there's just too much bitterness and rage here. I'm not going to deal with this case.
Yes, I have been very lucky in my career that I'm in a position where I'm really able to pick and choose who our firm represents. And there's 20 of us here at Wasser, Cooperman, and Mandels. And if I feel that somebody is too bitter, not able to think reasonably, not able to separate their emotions from the business transaction, or, you know, maybe they're just not a good fit, we will not take them on.
And what makes you decide that you will take them on?
If they really embrace or appear able to embrace a similar philosophy to what we espouse, excuse the pun, in terms of getting it resolved, you know, being mediation and settlement oriented, being reasonable in terms of what their expectations are, having an understanding once it's explained to them of what the law is in the state of California. And so not saying, for example, well, I'm not going to give him half of everything I made during the marriage. That's just not happening. Right. Yes, it is. So if we've explained that to them and they're saying things like that, that may not be a good fit. And there's plenty of colleagues that I have who are willing to take those clients and probably make a great deal of profit from them, because the more conflict and the more unreasonableness there is, the more money the attorneys make.
Well, obviously, when people are getting divorced, they're in a very emotional condition, as we've discussed, and they're often very, you know, subjectively not accurate about what they say. I mean, the portrait they have of their own marriage could really not be, in fact, you know, empirically true in any way, really. How do you decide whether the client's picture of the marriage is actually, a true one?
Well, to the first point, often people have an unrealistic recollection of their marriage, but because most of the states in the U.S. now are no fault, it may not matter. It doesn't matter who cheated or who was mean or who left the toilet seat up. At the end of the day, you get to, here's how we're going to divide the assets, here's how we're going to come up with support payments, and here's how we're going to come up with custody. There are some things that are more subjective, like who was the primary caretaker? And often I'll have couples come in and they'll say, well, of course I was. And the other one will say, no, you weren't. Of course I was. So there are ways of figuring out what actually happened, both financially with regard to custody, when assets were acquired. You go back and you look at the paperwork. You go back and you look at calendars. You go back and you figure out, you know, how things happened. In this day and age of electronic files, you can find so much of the information. It's very, very difficult, for example, to hide money. It's very difficult to not be able to have a trail as to what happened when. And so generally you can tell if somebody's being honest, you can tell whether or not they may just not remember or whether that is actually something that needs to be uncovered there. And through the discovery process, we are absolutely able to figure out what is the case.
And does that sometimes lead for very difficult conversations when you're telling somebody, you know what, the way you're recalling this is just not true?
Yes, it absolutely does. Particularly people ask me often, well, is it difficult to represent celebrities or high net worth individuals? And generally, those are people who are very often told yes. And so we may be the people who are the first to say to them in a long period of time, no, this is not correct. This is not what the evidence is going to reflect. And if we go into court with this, we will lose. So let's nip it in the bud now and come up with a settlement that more accurately reflects what occurred.
Well, prenups, of course, are such a delicate issue. I mean, they seem to be a kind of minefield. And I have to confess, I think it's a very difficult conversation to have. I don't know that I could have had such a conversation when I got married, you know, to my husband, start raising the question of whether we were going to split at some point and how much would I get. Do you have any language that you suggest to actually pop that question?
Yes. I mean, not specific, but often I will have clients that say to me, I want to retain you. I'd like you to draft the prenuptial agreement. I trust you. Either you represented me in my divorce or I've known you from word of mouth or other colleagues. But I have to ask you a question even before we begin drafting. How am I possibly supposed to broach this subject with my fiancé? You really want to do it in a place and an atmosphere that there is trust and when things are still good. We are now at a time, Tina, where it's not such an unusual or unheard of request, particularly among the wealthier people who are getting married. It almost always comes up in some way, shape, or form. I can't imagine a couple getting engaged and making it all the way to their wedding day without anyone saying, hey, did you have a prenup? Whether it's your parents, your business manager, your agent, your lawyer, somebody will likely ask that question and pose that question. And so it's not such an unheard of thing.
But I would still submit that it's very hard to do that pre being asked by somebody to marry you. I mean, if somebody hasn't even said, will you marry me, it's difficult to start talking about the financial deal.
That's absolutely true. And you don't have to have the prenuptial agreement conversation before you get married. But as an example, I have clients who have been married before. I represented them in their first divorces. Now they start dating someone. I would imagine, based on my conversations with them that probably from the second or third date, they have said things like, oh, my divorce was really difficult and I don't know that I'd ever want to go through it again. Or if I were to marry again, I would absolutely want to have a prenup. Or here's what I feel about the idea of my spouse not working when I am working very hard and our kids seeing someone who doesn't work. You're having those kind of financial conversations and about roles in the relationship that would then obviously lead to, hey, we are thinking about getting married, but you should know that it's very important to me that we have a prenuptial agreement beforehand. It's part of the dialogue of your relationship.
Sure. Well, of course, though, life is such a journey, though, isn't it, Laura, that you have no idea what your finances are going to be by the time you get divorced. And as we saw with the Jeff and Mackenzie Bezos case, I mean, Mackenzie was right there along with her husband when he started Amazon, served as Amazon's first accountant, helped ship orders. But never in either of this couple's wildest dreams would they wind up being the richest couple in the world.
Which is why I find it interesting when young people who have not earned any money yet are very insistent on having prenups. For the most part, young people that don't have anything yet don't need prenuptial agreements because if they're merging into this partnership, what they earn will be something that they make together. And again, those roles are defined from everything I've heard and seen in the media. I mean, I don't know the Bezos family, but they have done this together. And he's very, very easy to credit her with all that she did to help him during this time. And I don't know that if you went back in time and said, okay, we're going to do this with a prenup, that he would have necessarily said, oh God, I wish I'd had one. You don't know.
Right.
But a 25-year marriage is a pretty good run for most people.
Well, how does a spouse, do you think, prove the worth of all that counsel, support, and early willingness to share risk? I mean, you know, some people might think, well, you know, he made all the money or she made all the money. Why does she actually or he need to have so much? And yet that spouse knows that all of that moral support, all of that sort of emotional lift that she did or he did, in fact, is worth half.
You don't have to prove what it's worth. I mean, I say to people all the time, your spouse could have been right there with you, like, you know, the old stereotype from the 1950s and 60s, making a tuna casserole for your boss when he came over for dinner and supporting you and being the sounding board for your ideas. Or he or she could have been sitting on the couch eating bonbons. They're still getting half in a community property state.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why, if you know the nature of your spouse-to-be, perhaps you might want to opt out of the laws in your state before you get married. Because if they're not the kind of person that's going to be right there next to you helping you out, but you still love them anyway, then you might say, I'm not comfortable sharing everything with you equally.
Would it be helpful, do you think, to the institution of marriage to just make a prenup a formal requirement of tying the knot?
Well, I think it would be helpful to the institution of marriage if couples were forced to do some kind of counseling, communication. I'm not sure that we can foist on people an agreement that they make to opt out of what the law already is. For example, I don't personally choose to get married in the state of California because I don't want to opt into the law. But by the same token, having children in this state means that I'm opting into a law regarding custody and child support. And I'm okay with that because I believe those are the children's rights. So I think it would be important. I mean, there was that great line from the movie Parenthood that Keanu Reeves says, where he says, you need a license to fish and you need a license to drive, but any expletive can become a parent. And I feel like that's true about getting married as well. I mean, a lot of religious denominations have people speak to a priest or a rabbi before somebody will perform that ceremony. Sometimes you even have to take a class if you're getting married in that church, temple, etc. But there's nothing that the state asks that couples do before they tie the knot. And I think that's interesting because I have very educated, intelligent, sophisticated people come in to me and say, what do you mean I have to split my retirement account? Or what do you mean I don't get the house? I'm the mom. Aren't I supposed to get the house? Or what do you mean I don't, I have to pay support? He's the man. Shouldn't he have to pay support? He didn't do anything. I want to cut this albatross from around my neck, and you're telling me he's going to cost me basically the same that he cost me during our marriage. How do people not know what the law is when they get married? When you get married and you pick your venue and you pick your flowers and you pick your dress and you go cake tasting, you have to sign contracts for all of those vendors. But the most important contract that you're going to enter into is when you walk down the aisle with that person, and often people don't even know the terms.
Wow. Well, this is so interesting. I mean, just give me the 10 best states to get divorced in, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, it depends who you are.
Okay.
Depends who has the money. For example, people flock to California if they're going to be asking for spousal or child support. We're one of the very top highest child support payment states by tens. New York is another very high one. So people come here. I often have cases where I am trying to get the case kicked out of California because my client, who may be a pro basketball player, excuse the stereotype, but it happens quite a bit, ended up having sex in California, but nobody lives in California. But mom still wants to get support in California because the action in some way commenced here. Much, much higher in California. High in New York. New York child support lasts until the child's 21, whereas in California it's 18. So you kind of do a balancing test. Do I get more for 18 years or a little bit less, but still high for 21 years? California is a very good state to get married, as is Washington State, because they're community property states. So if you're hitching your wagon to a star and you want to make sure you're going to get half of the assets, these are good states. Texas, on the other hand, not such a great state in terms of support. I generally caution people not to forum shop when it comes to getting divorced or getting married.
Wow. It's fascinating to listen to all this. And also fascinating, as you say, that people talk so little about that when they're actually getting married and, in fact, look closely at what the laws are.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
What's more of a tinderbox in a divorce case most of the time? Is it money or is it children?
I think it's children, but I do see that so many, even in the past 10 years, so many people come to me already with an understanding of what they're going to do with their kids. That the one pendulum swing that I've really seen in my field is this idea of custody. And again, this spans the socioeconomic demographics, both with It's Over Easy, our users that are of a much lower economic, you know, asset value, and the folks that come to our firm, most of them have worked out some kind of a custody plan or understanding. It's much more equal than it was years ago. Usually it's mom and dad, or dad and mom and mom, sharing custodial time with the kids. It has finally sunk in to the American culture that children have a right to spend as much time as possible with each of their parents and experience each of their parents. So often people will come and say, you know, we're good on the custody, we're working with a therapist or a co-parenting counselor, but we need help dividing our assets and figuring out support. Is it a tinderbox? Yes. If somebody else is dating or marrying a new partner, if there is a problem with the child, whenever I have clients that have kids that are facing any kind of spectrum disorders, anybody that is having a drug or alcohol problem, behavioral issues, educational and academic issues, vaccination issues has been a big one that's come up lately. Those are where you get into problems where people just simply can't agree. But for the most part, people are understanding much more now than ever before, particularly that dads have a stake in this and that kids benefit from having custodial time with their father. Fathers.
So what are the rising trends that you see? I mean, as you say, you're seeing it from both ends. You have your high net worth clients, and then you have all of these people who are being counseled on your digital property. So what are you seeing as the sort of three or four things that are maybe different from what they were 10 years ago?
I'd say the top one is mediation and collaborative law, people wanting to be the masters of their own destiny. By its very nature, it's overeasy. The online divorce platform allows people to do that. And the folks coming to my office saying, we want you to mediate this for us. We want you to take care of it for both of us, or we want you to represent one of us. Let's get a retired judicial officer. Let's mediate it. Let's not go to court. I think people are really realizing that if they can work it out themselves, not only do they save money, but again, divorce is the one lawsuit that you will have that is not something where you don't see the other party again. If you have a slip and fall at a market or a fender bender or a landlord-tenant dispute, you're never going to see that person again. So you can say terrible things, you can feel terrible things, but this person, once your divorce is over, particularly if you have children, you're going to have to deal with for the rest of your life. So the emotional and financial toll that a divorce can take if it gets litigious is horrible. So mediation, I'd say, is the top trend. The other things that I'm definitely seeing are greater shared custodial time, as I said, between parents. I'm seeing parents do something called nesting as it comes to custody. I don't know that that's always a good long-term plan. But
what is nesting?
It's when the children live in the family residence and the parents rotate out. Mm-hmm. So you'll have to find either one or two other places for the out parent to go in his or her off week, but it's much less disruptive for kids. And again, I don't know that this works long term. People have made it work, but it's a good short-term plan. It helps children figure out that they're not going to be displaced, that their family is still a family, that their backpacks and their iPads and that their favorite blankets get to stay at one place and they're not being taken back and forth and perhaps left somewhere else.
I think that, personally, I think that I've always felt the saddest and most difficult thing for children was that, the kind of shuffling between houses and you never got your favorite doll or whatever.
Yes.
Do you ever counsel a spouse just to wait it out? You know, in other words, do you ever say, look, he or she is having a mad fling, but you've been married 25 or 30 years, and this too shall pass.
Absolutely. I actually have a placard on my desk that says, this too shall pass. Now, it's not always about the mad fling that's going to pass. Sometimes it's just about the horrible time. But yes, one of the things that I enjoy about my job is that I get to problem solve. And sometimes the solution to a problem is just wait it out. I'm not a counselor. I'm not licensed as a therapist. I'm not qualified to give, you know, mental health advice. By the same token, given what I have seen personally and professionally, I do believe that after an infidelity or a difficult time with drugs or drinking or gambling or finances, people can get past it. And so if there is a way to work things through, I generally would recommend that people do it. I've seen people go through an entire divorce and then reconcile. I've seen people take a month or two off and then reconcile. I've seen people, you know, decide as soon as they had their first meeting with me that for whatever reason, this wasn't something that they could stomach and they stuck it out together. And mm-hmm. I know those people still. And, you know, there's only so much people can swallow. But on the flip side of that is, and I've said this to people, if it's not her shit, it's going to be somebody else's shit. Excuse my language. So figure out what you can take and then go back and figure out if you want to start all over again with somebody else or if you're happier in this relationship.
Mm-hmm. Still, TBD. When you meet a couple who you've know and who got together, do you have an instinct about whether that marriage is going to last, Laura?
I do, but I'm not usually right. It's really interesting. Some of the people that I think to myself, oh, that will never last, are still together 20 years later. And then some of the people that seem absolutely perfectly matched together couldn't make it work. The other thing to keep in mind in my field is, one, you really must never judge. You never, never quite know what's going on behind the scenes. And so you have to kind of be a bit of a blank slate as you're listening to people telling you their situation. You can only work with what you're given. And as the problem solvers that family law attorneys are supposed to be, using that and figuring out a way often to think outside of the box and get the matter resolved can be the most beneficial that you can be to clients.
How much is sex a part of this whole phenomenon in terms of divorce? I mean, is sex a leading indicator of why somebody is dissatisfied and wants to get out?
It's an indicator, yes. And again, people go through, there was a movie where Jennifer Aniston referred to it as a down cycle. People definitely go through that. There are plenty of marriages that don't have a great deal of sex, and they've figured out a way to make it work. I'm always surprised when somebody comes in and says, I was completely blindsided. I can't believe he/she left me and is with another man/woman. How could this have happened? I don't understand how he's sleeping with somebody else. And I will sometimes, if I feel comfortable, say, what was your sex life like? And they say, well, we haven't had sex in 6 years. And I say, well, and you're surprised? Mm-hmm. I think it's very important. I think sex is a form of human communication. So just like all communication, as you said, from the time you have a prenuptial agreement or the discussions about getting engaged to the time that you have kids, raise kids, make it through any kind of conflict in your relationship, there will be so many bumps in the road. If you are able to effectively communicate, you can often have a really, really good evolving relationship. If you don't communicate, then you're going to run into problems. So I say to couples all the time, just like you go to the gym on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, have some kind of therapy where you can, for, you know, 60 to 90 minutes, just completely spew whatever your issues or resentments are so that they don't build up. Sex is a form of communication. That level of intimacy and connection is a very important, I think, component to a relationship for a couple. And when you're having sex with somebody that's outside of the relationship, that takes something away from your relationship. Now, I also know couples who frequently either will invite other parties into their marriage or one person will go outside of the marriage. And if they're talking about it and it works, again, no judgment, it works for them. But keeping those lines of communication open and having an understanding of everybody's position is essential.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that hugely wealthy people with so much to lose just risk it all by being really indiscreet sexually, sending wildly indiscreet texts, I mean, and so on, and all of the things that we see? Is that likelihood much greater, you think, in the digital age that you're going to be caught? And if so, why do people keep doing it?
It's a great question. I don't know the answer. I don't know that it's any different for wealthy people than it is for normal people. But I think we are all now just learning how to cope and conduct ourselves in the digital age. I have to imagine that as time goes on, we will not see as many of these indiscretions. It still boggles my mind that people send pictures of their genitals over the internet to somebody else when we've heard and read so much about it. And again, it's not just 13-year-old boys, it's adults. And I don't understand.
Well, I don't understand either. And do you think, though, that those things can really make the other party crazy? I mean, it's like, here you are, you're going along, being terribly civilized and, consciously uncoupling or whatever it was that Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris Martin said. And then, boom, a tabloid newspaper starts, publishes a whole rash of really steamy, intimate stuff. That's very raw, right?
It's very raw. But I have said to people in the past that have come to me and said, this is so awful. How could he or she have done this? I say to them, particularly again, like with the shared pictures of genitalia, seems like this is your get out of jail free card. Why would you want to be with somebody who did that? Let's go.
That's a very, very good response, I have to say. Well, you represented Angelina Jolie in her divorce from Billy Bob Thornton and had been representing her in her divorce from Brad Pitt until you parted ways this summer. How much more difficult is your job when marital disputes get aired in the press at the kind of velocity that that was? And when one party launches a campaign to trash the other, how does the lawyer play into that?
We don't. We don't play into it. Again, there's so much that goes on in terms of media. I'm not a publicist. I'm not nearly as savvy as any of the publicists or, frankly, the journalists that I know. So my rule of thumb is to stay quiet. Because there are so many issues that have to do with attorney-client privilege, I don't give interviews regarding any of our clients, even in the instances where they've asked me to. We just don't do that because, as I said, the evidence, to the extent that it is relevant, and it's often not. Sometimes in custody it is, but to the extent that it's relevant, these things will come out as part of the discovery process in a case. I generally ask that our clients try to go on lockdown during the divorce process just so that they don't expose their family to the kind of things that we do see quite often splashed across not only, the newsstands, but on our computers.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
When you grew up in Beverly Hills and your father's a divorce lawyer too, with high-profile clients including Tom Cruise and Steven Spielberg, Clint Eastwood, when did you realize that this was your calling?
I didn't realize it was my calling until after I graduated from law school. I had been working at the Western Law Center for Disability Rights, and I was married at the time because I got married after my second year of law school. And right after I took the California bar exam, at the time we were 25 years old, each, my ex-husband and I, realized that probably we were not fated to be together until death do we part. But when I went to my father and said, I know you're not into nepotism, but I really need a job right now. The Western Law Center for Disability Rights is not making it work for me because now my income has been divided. He said, you can come work here until you get your bar results, and guess what your first case will be? You can handle your own divorce, which I did, and we parted very amicably.
Was it equitable?
It was, well, yeah, we had nothing, so it was quite easy to divide. I took the credit card debt and our dog. That was how it ended up. Less money, less problems, I suppose. And that was when I started working here. And I thought it would probably be for a relatively short period of time. As it turned out, I really, really enjoy this field for some of the reasons I said. Just the very interesting study of human nature, the problem-solving aspect, and getting to meet so many different people from so many different walks of life and really getting to know them quite well, quite fast, and very deeply for a 6 to 12 month period as we deal with their divorce. Okay. And then I'll run into them maybe, you know, a year or two later and get a smile and a wave, but please don't come over to the table and say hello because you kind of remind me of the worst time of my life.
Do they, most of the clients that you have, do they end up fond of you or do they think, you know, that Laura Wasser, she cleaned me out?
I would like to think that it's the former because of the referrals that I get from many of them and, you know, the warm welcome that I sometimes get from them. I think it is the former. You know, we send our bills on a monthly basis. They can see what they're being billed for. There is so much client interaction in a family law matter, unlike corporate law where you have hours of billing on, you know, some contract that you never see. Our clients usually know what they're being billed for, and I don't usually think that they're getting, that they feel like they're being cleaned out. Also because I do remind them so often, hey, more conflict equals more billing. Mm-hmm. My kids already go to private school. I drive a nice car. Let's keep the money in your bank account.
You have two children, but they're by two different partners, and you're currently dating, but you're not married.
You make it seem so slutty, Tina.
No, I don't. I'm very impressed at your sort of high-octane existence that you managed to do all this, frankly.
Yes, I'm tired. Yes, I have two fantastic sons. They have two different dads, neither to whom I was married. We all co-parent surprisingly, really, really effectively and well. And I've been in a relationship for about 5.5 years, very happily so.
Mm-hmm. How many of your clients are same-sex couples these days? Is there anything different about those partings?
No, not anymore. I mean, yes, I do a lot of work with same-sex couples, and no longer are those partings different. What we were dealing with in the past was resolution of issues, incident to cohabitation agreement. We would have many more Marvin claims or palimony claims because the lesser earning party would say, but you told me that you would take care of me forever, or you told me that everything you earned during the time we lived together was half mine, and the only reason that we weren't married is because we legally can't get married. Now we're in a situation where if you want to get married and you are in as the same sex as your partner, you'll get married just like a heterosexual couple. And if you don't get married, there's obviously some reason for that. So the government has made it a lot easier for same-sex couples and family law attorneys, and I've not seen anything particularly different about same-sex couple relationships or divorces. I am very, you know, both as a divorce attorney and just a human of the world, happy that everybody is now being treated equally.
Mm-hmm. Presumably you also deal with couples who live together for numerous years without actually getting married, and they just break up. How is that figured now? It's been a long while since I've heard about palimony cases.
Yeah, you don't hear about them quite as much anymore because they don't make that much sense. People realize that if two individuals wanted to get married, they would get married. And if they didn't get married, it wasn't that they just forgot. What a palimony or a Marvin claim is not a family law claim. It is a contract claim in a civil courtroom where somebody says, you breached your either oral or your implied contract to me. And I let other opportunities go by the wayside. I relied on your promise to me that you would take care of me or that all of this was half mine. And I think most judicial officers, and by the way, those cases, unlike your normal family law divorce or paternity case, can be tried in front of juries. So most judges, and I would imagine juries, look at the person and said, well, if you thought you were being treated like you were married, why didn't you just insist on getting married? And maybe they tried to, but that didn't work out for them. So you don't see so many palimony cases. By the same token, we have several folks who come to us and say, I've been in a relationship for a long period of time, we are breaking up, and I want to make sure he or she is taken care of. Can you write something up where I give him or her a certain net sum or a certain amount each month for a certain period of time so that he or she feels comfortable? And as the consideration for that, they agree that there will be no lawsuit so that I don't have to worry about paying for a certain period of time and then getting sued later, because those lawsuits are expensive either way. And we do write those up as well. People, I think, their first instinct is to try and do the right thing. Keep in mind, and this is another big change that came along with same-sex marriage, if you are paying either a property settlement or support, maintenance, alimony, to someone that was not your spouse, then it is not tax-free. So you're going to have to pay gift tax. So if I say, gosh, I've been living with my boyfriend for 5 years and now he's moving out and I want to get him set up somewhere and I'm going to give him a chunk of money, I could do that as my spouse without having that be tax impacted. If I have to pay my boyfriend that money, then I'm going to have to pay gift tax on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Laura, you're absolutely amazing fund of information on all of this. And I suppose one question I have is there one piece of advice that you would give to people contemplating a divorce?
I would absolutely say if you are contemplating divorce, educate yourself. Look at what that will entail. I would get into some kind of marriage counseling or therapy with your spouse, and then again separately on your own, to really talk through your feelings about it, the issues, all of the things that will go into that process if that's the road you head down. And then if you decide to, be kind. This is someone to whom you were once married. You've maybe procreated with them. You probably will have to be dealing with them for some period of time, not just until your kids age out and become adults. Be kind.
Okay. And do you still believe in love, Laura?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Wonderful to talk to you. And I hope I'm never in your office.
I hope you're never in my office either. Bye.
Listening to TBD with me, Tina Brown, brought to you by Wondery. You can subscribe to TBD on Apple Podcasts, follow us on Spotify, or keep up with us however you listen to podcasts. If you like what you heard today, please spread the word. Tweet about it, Instagram it, or post about it on your favorite fake Russian account on Facebook. TBD is produced by Tina Brown, Kathleen Russo, Julie Subrin, Karen Compton, Justine Giannino, and Michael Solomon. Original theme music is composed by Forrest Gray. Come back next time for more smart people on TBD.